episode 3. DJ Papa Shro.
What up, what up?
Well, that was interesting.
Indeed.
A lot of good matches. A lot of really good matches. Roman Reigns, Jey Uso kicked off the show. I didn't think that would happen.
I was shocked. I was shocked when I turned that on.
But it set the tempo for the night.
Absolutely. I thought it was a great decision afterwards. Absolutely.
Hey, let's dive into that match. We're going to review Hell in a Cell a little bit and talk about, you know, just some random fun things today. But what a match. And yeah. That was... I didn't expect that much out of it, but Jey Uso is a really good storyteller and something that I think has been overlooked his whole career. Well, obviously, he's been a tag team his whole career. But now, I don't mind him being a single competitor.
Yeah, I kind of like it. I think he really performed well. And I think both the Usos, I think in the last probably, you know, 3-4 years-ish, like, have shown how good they are, mm-hmm. you know, in the ring, on the mic. They can really do it all. And as you said, storytelling, like, you know, wrestling is storytelling in the ring, between the ropes. And, you know, they're excellent at that, both of them. And I think they both did an amazing job. I thought that match was amazing. I thought probably the best match of the night. And to kick off the show, it started with, you know, it set the tone. And my only issue with it was I thought it was a little overdone at the end. A little bit of overacting. I didn't need Roman Reigns crying in the middle of the ring. That was
You know what? I didn't either. But once it was explained why he was crying, I was like, oh, that's actually brilliant. Because, you know, he's not sad that he did it. He's sad that what he has to do now is basically kill Jimmy Uso because he's going against Roman Reigns. And I, now looking back on that, I go, well, actually, that that's a really interesting touch on that.
Okay, I feel you. Kind of looking at it from that perspective, I kind of feel you. Mm-hmm. Just in the moment, it was just, it was real cringeworthy.
It was stupid, yeah.
in the moment.
I was like, what the fuck? That just killed all his momentum, but now.
That's exactly what I thought. I was like, how are you going to have this big badass heel just sobbing in the middle of the ring? But yeah, look, retrospective, that it did add a nice little touch to the match. I liked when Jimmy came in, he threw him in the guillotine. Mm-hmm. And that's what made him say, I quit. That was a phenomenal ending to that match. And what is the injury with Jimmy? So I guess he's injured because that's what I...
I think he was... I don't know if they're using that as leverage for him being gone longer.
Okay.
With his out of wrestling issues. But I think they said it was his knee or something like that.
Okay.
But I think that's used as extra leverage just to kind of deflect why he was gone for
so long.
Paul Heyman's facials were excellent.
Absolutely. And then after the match, the way he was looking at him, just shocked what he just did. And then they had the whole, they put the lay on him with the Wild Samoans up at the top of the ramp. Man, and I apologize for not knowing their names. I feel like awful.
Yeah, I forgot.
With history, but you know, that was his dad up there, the Wild Samoans. Yeah,
I mean, I think that adds a new layer to Paul Heyman, Roman Reigns, because
absolutely
with Heyman Lesnar, Heyman was speaking for Lesnar out of their friendship. Now it looks like Heyman is working for Reigns, basically out of fear of Roman Reigns.
Yeah, and it makes him look like an evil mastermind.
Yeah.
And especially with now the plan with basically the Usos going to work for him as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's interesting, and I think it's a good touch. And I think that, especially when it comes to a heel, almost the more the merrier.
Right.
Obviously, the NWO is one thing, and, you know, having 57, you know, people involved. But having, you know, two guys that are wrestlers plus a manager, like, I'm all for all of that.
Right.
Great way to draw heat, I think.
Yeah, I think so. But, I mean, I think you have to be careful with that. I think at some point you have to give the Usos the titles back. But I think it'd be, what, the New Day and Usos mm-hmm. for the 5 millionth time?
Right. Supposedly that's the plan, is to put the tag belts on.
Yeah.
Is what I've heard is the plan with the Usos, and, you know, you'll have all your champions. Mm-hmm. Minus the IC belt.
Yeah. I mean, so that set the tone, and then we had what? We had, who was next?
Hardy and Elias?
Was the next Hardy match and Elias. I mean, that, I think so. I think that was, I mean,
yeah.
It's kind of hard to build off such a short story after a bogus story to begin with. So, I wasn't a big fan of that match. I didn't really even watch it.
Yeah, that one put me to sleep, kind of. I watched on Sunday night after Sunday night football. I watched, tried to watch the pay-per-view, or Hell in a Cell, and I watched that whole first match. Now, for some reason on the network, the English was not working. And I watched it directly after, like, it had just got done streaming.
Right.
So I kind of just attributed that to, okay, there's some problem with it being uploaded or something. But none of the languages were right. I ended up watching it in Spanish. That Jey Uso and Roman Reigns match, which was phenomenal with the Spanish announcers. I can't lie, that kind of added to it. But then when it came to the Jeff Hardy and Elias match, I was done. And I watched the rest of it Monday morning.
Yeah. I mean, I did too, but what was it? Miz beat
Otis.
Otis. Tucker turned on him.
That, I don't know how I feel about it, and I haven't been the best at keeping up with what's been going on in the WWE for the last year or so, honestly, so I don't know too much about Otis and Tucker and haven't seen really their progression.
Right.
That was kind of, I don't know, I feel like it just feels like a burial anytime someone loses the Money in the Bank just because of the history of that taking place.
Yeah.
Kennedy and Corbin, and I don't know if there's anybody else.
I don't think there's anybody that's lost it in a match other than those two.
But man, the Baron Corbin, I still can't take Baron Corbin serious.
Yeah. I mean, that's too bad, especially since he's from here.
Yeah.
But that match was interesting. And then you had arguably a tie for the best match of the night, which I'm surprised this went on next to last, but Sasha Banks and Bayley.
Yeah.
And they culminated that whole rivalry very well, I thought, inside Hell in a Cell.
I absolutely agree. I think that it was a wonderful way to do it. And the way that, you know, like we've talked about on the show from the beginning, is it had to be a knockdown, drag out, and that's exactly what it was. And like we were talking about, during the show, the storytelling was amazing in that match, I think. I loved the fact that the whole chair thing, I thought that was really good. Storytelling, her knocking it out of the cell as it lowered, and then the chair being reintroduced later in the match. One of the most memorable moves to me, and I don't know why, but to me, the backbreaker on the chair, that is like just such a devastating looking move to me.
And yeah, they did well. I mean, obviously, they've known each other forever. So that wasn't.
And they put on amazing matches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought, the touch at the end to make her tap with the chair, one, makes Bayley look strong enough, just because if it was a normal submission, she may not have tapped.
Mm-hmm.
Two, I think as a fan, I think everybody wanted Bayley to win, just because they know that Sasha's runs are not very good. I don't know. I'm disappointed that Sasha won, but I think at the end that's the best story. But I don't know where they go from here for that, though. Because, I mean, all of this led up to that. Now, where do you lead up to now?
Right. And where does it go? Do they continue that story? Because I think for now, I think you should put a fork in it for the moment. Right,
because I mean, the only
thing, been like a 2 year long story almost.
Because all right, I mean, now basically all you do is have Bayley just be obsessed and have her kick the shit out of Sasha every single week until they get to Survivor Series, but then Bayley has to win; she can't lose, and because that just makes her look weak. So I don't know, but I thought it was a great match.
And yeah, it was a wonderful match.
Put on a great show. But I just, there's nobody else on SmackDown who's even close to both of them talent wise since Charlotte's still out.
Yeah, who's even on the SmackDown women's roster?
Nobody of big note.
Right. Yeah, I can't think of anyone else off the top of my head, honestly.
Now, I mean, if SmackDown drafted the SmackDown Tag Team Champions like they should have, they could have Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax, two heels, taking on a face like Sasha Banks.
Well, and then with that, too, like, what the hell is the deal with the Women's Tag Team Championships?
Right. So like, basically,
you should have them hot brands,
they still can, yeah. And they probably will, just because there's a loophole in that story. And I'd love to see Shayna Baszler, Sasha Banks. I think that'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. I almost wish that there was one champion again, like back in the day with the Undisputed Championship.
Yeah,
I thought that I think that has been one of the most underrated and smartest moves that WWE's done, you know, in the last 20, 30 years, maybe.
Right.
Just for the simple fact of having, you know, one guy
right
at the top, we all know who the champion is. I do like the fact of, just when it comes down to, I mean, Survivor Series and us being right here, right now, I like the champion versus champion matches, and gives you interesting
Because who has
matchups?
It's Orton
and Reigns.
Reigns.
And I'm excited for that match, actually.
Yeah.
I think that'll be really interesting. And he mentioned Roman on Raw. Right. Saying that, you know, Roman Reigns, he's not worried about Roman Reigns, he's not worried about The Fiend, he's not worried about, you know, whatever. And it's produced a lot of really good matchups over the last few years.
Right.
Lesnar, Styles, Lesnar, Bryan.
Mm-hmm.
So it does give us really good matchups. But I liked the Undisputed Champion back in the day. I thought that was a cool take, especially on the brand split.
Yeah, I didn't mind the Undisputed Championship, but I think it also kind of puts you in a hole of you know, who's going to be the next champion? Who's going to be this? Who's going to do that? Who's going to fight for the other championships? But back then, you had so many top-of-the-line guys.
Mm-hmm.
That it was kind of hard to decide who's the number one contender. So, I mean, I was okay with the fact that they split the titles just because there were so many guys that could be the, you know, the Undisputed Champion.
Man, and absolutely, and really, nowadays, same thing. I mean, you have so many guys on the roster, it's just really the fact of the matter of knowing how to utilize them.
Right.
And so, okay, so let's get back to Hell in a Cell and talk about the next match that was Bobby Lashley and Slapjack is his name from Retribution. And this has been, we have not spoke, this is the first time we spoke about Retribution right. on the show since, yeah. and from the inception of the show is right when Retribution was beginning. And I think that we really probably haven't talked about them just for the simple fact that I don't know what the hell to think about them.
No.
And especially after these last, like, 48 hours of Monday Night Raw and Hell in a Cell, what the hell is, what is Retribution? Who cares about Retribution?
I don't think they even know at this point. Honestly, I think they'd be okay to just drop it. I don't think anyone would care. It's just pointless. If you're going to have somebody go out there and get killed by Bobby Lashley, and just...
Obviously. And then on Raw lost the Elimination Tag Team matchup against the Hurt Business.
Right. And I mean, if you're going to give them an entrance that's lights out and, you know, has the solo Retribution white on the screen, that's got to be a strong team, but it's not.
Right, and I don't think that we've been given a real reason to care about anybody in this stable. No. I mean, Mustafa Ali, he was, you know, this is, you know, somewhat of his, you know, big push, or was supposed to be, but other than him, I mean, really, who do we care about?
Yeah, this, we're watching the rerun of this match, this reminds me of, it reminds me of like a mid early 2000s Vince McMahon trying to form a heel faction and just grabbed a bunch of lower card guys and tried to make them a top heel organization. It didn't work.
It's probably exactly what it is.
This is exactly what this is.
And you know what's funny? We just watched Slapjack's entrance from Hell in a Cell, and it makes me think of Sanity. Like a bad TNA knockoff Sanity.
Bad Sanity. That's exactly what
I'm so upset. Like, I feel like there's huge that WWE just sleeps on. I think Sanity. I really, really like Sanity. I thought that was a really good group. Nikki Cross, when she was just, you know, the Wild Woman, and, you know, Killian Dane and Eric Young being the leader of that group. And I thought that was awesome. I think Eric Young is a really underrated wrestler. And
well, I mean, he was the most experienced one.
Absolutely.
So he was going to be the leader, obviously. And yeah, I thought it worked. I mean, they had the intimidation factor in them, but I just don't think they had, you know, the muscle to carry that on. Or to just, if you're going to, why?
Right, Lashley is just ragdolling Slapjack right now.
And what earned this guy a title match?
I don't think that this was for the title.
It was.
It was? Yep. Okay, okay.
So what...
Right.
I mean, if this is this easy for Bobby Lashley, then why did he...
And why would Mustafa Ali pick him? Because that was the big part of the story was on the kickoff show. Mustafa Ali named Slapjack to be the man that's challenging Bobby Lashley.
Right. Why not just have Mustafa Ali versus Bobby Lashley?
Well, you don't want to... I don't know. The only way I can explain it is you don't want to give away your, you know, your top guy to... But, I mean, it's a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
It's a pay-per-view. Why was there not more build-up?
I mean, this is such a 2005 gimmick guy that it takes you back to a place where wrestling was not very great. And he doesn't even know how to pin correctly.
Yeah, this was bad. I this was one of the worst parts of the show, and I honestly don't really remember even watching this.
And I mean, look at him
much.
Trying to get it. Like, can you not see in your mask? Like, look at him trying to do these headlocks. I know Bobby Lashley is huge, but
that might honestly be a problem. And you know what? That's hilarious because that reminds me now, thinking of that, of Jey Uso. And I want to go back to that match for a minute to talk about all of this because this is a lot of what I was thinking while I was watching it. One, the when they pulled out the, oh, I can't think of the name of it, but you know when you have a rope match, what the hell?
Oh, a strap.
Strap. Yeah. Why the hell could I not think of that? But, okay, so they get the strap out, and Jay has just an awful time trying to wrap Roman's head in the strap. It was one of the just, you know, it wrestling. It's just wrestling. Like, that's the only way you could explain it.
I mean, that match was so chaotic, I think they were okay, just because it made it more chaotic.
Absolutely. But, and then he proceeded to nearly murder Roman Reigns. Yeah. That was when I was sitting there thinking about it, and when he went just lifeless, I was like, "He just murdered him."
Yeah, that was not the best attempt, but that was the only probably negative thing from that match.
Absolutely,
but I think it was so chaotic. Honestly, I think it's okay because it added more desperation to Jey Uso because obviously he wasn't going to win that match,
right?
But I think it also added another layer to Roman Reigns' character. I mean, he will die for the championship. And I think that was brilliant. I think that's what sold, you know, and then they just do a disqualification. Why?
Because it's WWE. We're back up to the Retribution match from Hell in a Cell.
Anyway, but I mean, and he's wearing all black. He's wearing a turtle. Like what? Anyway. I mean, this was obviously not good. And then where's the Hurt Business? Where are they at?
Right. And well, and essentially, it's a Monday Night Raw match. I mean, this is a weekly episode matchup. This is not pay-per-view. You know what's really funny about the Hurt Business to me is I just happened to watch TNA or Impact for quite some time during the Bully Beatdown Club.
Right.
Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The MVP rant. I mean, it's the exact same stable. Right. I think it's hilarious that they are doing the exact same thing. But I think that it worked in Impact. I enjoyed it. And I think that was part of what kind of kept me watching for that span of time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what made Impact interesting during that period. Because Kurt Angle had the main event Mafia. You know, so I think they were just trying to pair up different guys. But I like the Hurt Business. I mean, Shelton Benjamin, you know, shouldn't be in very many matches at this point of his career.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he still should be a part of the show every week. And he is. So, I mean, and MVP shouldn't be in many matches either. So, I think it's alright, you know, but this was pointless. And I think they knew that. So, I think they just ended the match way earlier than it needed to go. But this leads up to the main event, which was Orton McIntyre for the title. And I've heard people have mixed reactions on this. I thought it was fine.
I thought it was, too. I thought it was a pretty good match.
Yeah. I expected Orton to win, but it looked like they were going to let McIntyre win. Mm-hmm. And I was worried about that because, I mean, McIntyre could not win that match again. So, I mean, I think they just kind of booked themselves in the corner, but I was fine with Orton winning, and I was fine with how he won. I know people didn't necessarily like them being on top of the cage, but I didn't mind it. I thought it was a good tip of the cap to, you know, some of the older Hell in a Cell matches.
Yeah, and I think why not, because I think why not add some type of flair like that to what is, I think, clearly going to be number three out of the three Cell matches, right. You know? And I'm sure that's kind of why it got probably mixed reviews more so, because it wasn't the best match of the night. And, you know, that's not a bad thing, necessarily. I mean, there was two wonderful Hell in a Cells that had, you know, some real long-term storytelling aspects to them. You know, obviously Roman Reigns and Jey Uso, I mean, they're family. This goes way back. Bayley and Sasha Banks is, right. you know, two women that we've seen a friendship for the last, I mean, damn near 10 years, right? I mean, right. Going back to NXT to the early 2010s. So I think that, you know, it was clearly going to be, just from a story aspect, number three out of all of them. And you know, the way it delivered was a good match. It wasn't bad. It wasn't awful. It wasn't the most spectacular match. I liked the spots that they did. I think the spots that they did that they needed to do. But I think that this kind of goes back to gimmick pay-per-views, really. Because, you know, how many times have we seen the spot of the guy falling off the side of the cell into the table? You can only do so much with every gimmick, and I think when you have a Hell in a Cell every October and you're forced to have three Cell matches on one pay-per-view, and, you know, the Elimination Chamber, there's, you know, at least two Elimination Chamber matches, there's only so much you can do in one night, in one, you know, thing, and I think really the less we see things like that, the better, you know, because then it makes it mean more. I mean, the first Hell in a Cell was maybe the best Hell in a Cell ever because it was the first Hell in a Cell we saw. And then, you know, the King of the Ring where Mankind gets thrown off the top. I mean, back in the late 90s, it was very sparingly used. So I think that's a big part of sometimes when you get a lesser rivalry, maybe, And this has been a very intense rivalry between Orton and McIntyre. And then add in the Keith Lee in the mix. I thought that was really good. I thought that was really good to give us a break of them and continue the story. But all in all, it was pretty good. It was a pretty good match. I had no problems with it.
Yeah, I didn't really have a problem with it either. I didn't really understand the beginning of the match. I thought that was kind of random. Orton's sneak attack didn't work, which then why have him do that in the first place if it didn't even work? I mean, it I don't understand the development of McIntyre. Has he become this omnipotent being where he knows and senses everything? Because I mean, now, I mean, obviously, because he kicks out at one all the time pretty much, and he knew that Orton was behind him. So, is he all-knowing? I just don't understand. Because, I mean, we saw Monday night on Raw where he apparently worked out a deal with the Fiend. I think is their secret telling point of the story.
Interesting.
Because, okay. On Raw, the night after, Orton has a moment of bliss with Alexa Bliss, which everyone obviously knew that was foreboding to the Fiend showing up. But the Fiend, the lights went out, Orton goes on stage, or McIntyre comes out first, attacks Orton, lights go out, Orton's on front of the stage with the title, Fiend's behind him, Orton doesn't really turn around, he knows he's there, and then McIntyre's standing in the ring. McIntyre is not afraid of the Fiend, but knows Orton is trapped. So Orton either turns around and fights the Fiend or fights McIntyre. So Orton decides to walk back down to the ring and fight McIntyre. So, what are you doing with Drew McIntyre? Is he turning into a Kane? Or, because I mean, I just don't understand what you're trying to do with him at this point.
I think it's interesting how, like, cartoony somewhat WWE's gotten over the last, like, couple of years. Because even The Fiend, which I don't mind The Fiend because The Fiend is The Fiend. Like, you know, he's supposed to be this crazy character that kicks out of one. And I don't like it with Drew McIntyre because I don't know. It doesn't make sense. And I feel you. It's just kind of confusing. Is this guy just, you know, all-knowing, like you're saying? I think the big thing is just they want him to be as over as possible and to seem as great as possible, and that's awesome, but there's also other ways to do that. You don't necessarily have to have this, like, this guy has a sixth sense and, you know, is some kind of crazy. I mean he's the Scottish psychopath, so right. I mean and I get that, like, and make him a ruthless, like, if anything, to me he would almost be best with like a Triple H-esque type of persona, if that makes sense, you know, the cerebral assassin, like in those days when he was real, you know, go get the sledgehammer or you know, and just like a vindictive way. Like, he can be a face or a heel, whatever you need him to be, and still have this, you know, cold-blooded attitude toward, you know, his opponents and things of that nature. But I like Drew McIntyre, and he's definitely had a wonderful WWE Championship reign. But yeah, I feel like aspects like that are a little bit interesting, because I noticed that during the match when he it was like late in the match and he had a one count kick out.
Because watch this here. I mean, how are you not taken off guard by that?
Right.
It's obviously Randy Orton.
And we're watching the beginning of the match where, you know, he turns around, counters Randy with a surprise attack.
And I don't know. I didn't really understand the point of doing that. Yeah, I mean, if you're going to give Randy Orton, I understand McIntyre is much bigger than Orton, but if you want to give somebody the upper hand, give him the upper hand.
Especially in Orton's case, because he's the Viper. He's, right. You know, the apex predator. He's supposed to be a sneaky, slimy, you know, catch you with an RKO while you're not looking.
Right.
You know, that's his whole persona. I mean, right. The last 10 years.
So, I mean, I don't know. Anyway, I thought this was a really good pay-per-view.
Yeah, all in all, it was definitely very good. Especially from what we've seen the last, like, couple of months. We had, Clash of Champions, Payback.
Right.
I guess SummerSlam in there.
Right. Yeah, I liked it. I'd give it a 4.5 out of 5.
I could see that, yeah.
I'd give it a 4.5. I mean, but then again, I think that's kind of taken away from the main card matches, because the undercard matches were undercard matches. I mean, they weren't.
I would give it maybe, I'll settle on a 3.5. And the reason why I say this is because, no, I'll give it a 4. I'll give it a 4. No, I'm sorry, I'm thinking out loud right now. But I'll give it a 4. What takes really away from it, I would definitely say 4.5 if, you know, the Retribution thing was silly,
yeah,
laughable. Jeff Hardy and Elias served no purpose.
Right.
It just continued their rivalry. We saw that on Monday Night Raw, where Elias had his match with Keith Lee. Jeff Hardy comes out, hits him with a guitar. And Jeff Hardy got hit with a guitar earlier in the night by Elias. So now they're just trading guitar hits. And it almost reminds me of Shinsuke and AJ from WrestleMania 34, where, you know, they went a whole month of just trading dick kicks. Like, I think that's kind of, I don't know, like, I get it with the whole Elias thing, because, you know, the guitar thing, and it reminds me of Double J back in the day.
Yeah, where, it does.
Which is cool. I've always enjoyed the guitar hit. I mean, it's nice and, you know, satisfying when you see somebody just get hit and a guitar explode. And it looks like, oh man, that hurt. Like, you know, so it looks good. But all in all, with those two matches, that kind of took away from it. And something that I just now thought about, that I didn't even think during the show, which shows kind of maybe I don't care too much about the story and the rivalry, but the triple threat match we talked about last week. Murphy, Rollins, Dominic Mysterio.
Mm-hmm.
What happened with that? Was that on the pre-show? The kickoff show?
I have no idea.
Either it wasn't on there, or it was on the pre-show, because I didn't watch the kickoff show. Or CBS Sports lied to us.
Probably. I mean, they probably canned the match.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I didn't really want to see that match, honestly. I mean, we've seen it before. It would have been interesting to watch Rollins work with that.
Mm-hmm.
I
think that's a big payoff to that whole storyline, though. And I think that just shows, like, I would have much rather seen that than, you know, Slapjack versus Bobby Lashley. Or, you know, that could have easily been a pre-show thing. I mean, who cares? Or Jeff Hardy and Elias. I would have much rather seen that triple threat match rather than those two.
Right.
So, I mean, if you plug that in one of those, and maybe there's some, you know, we don't know about that, you know, with the match that may have got it canceled, or, you know, maybe, who knows. But that's what holds this pay-per-view back for me, because I think this is the best pay-per-view I've seen in quite some time, I feel.
Yeah.
I don't think that I felt this good about SummerSlam.
I liked SummerSlam just for the fact that Roman Reigns came back.
Yeah.
I thought SummerSlam wasn't bad. But this has probably been one of the better ones this year, for sure. I think if they have these matches just in-ring matches, they're not as good. So obviously the Hell in a Cell helped, you know, all three of the main card matches. But all in all, yeah, like I said, 4.5 for me. I thought it was interesting, because I was thinking about this the other day. If you had to book a match between CM Punk and Daniel Bryan, how would you do that?
Interesting. So what Okay, so we're talking more like right now?
Right now.
Okay, right now. So like a CM Punk comeback, essentially. Right. Interesting. I think you book Punk as a heel. I think what I would do is have him, which with the circumstances we're in, this doesn't work, but what I would like is to see him, you know, hoodie and, you know, his black shorts or whatever pop up out of the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Brian's given a promo, maybe something inspirational-ish, just to kind of drive the point home of heel face. Maybe talking about, you know, his injuries, yada, 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 his comeback story. Something like that. I know we've heard it a million times, but have Punk pop up in the ring and attack him and maybe not necessarily know who it is at first. Maybe put a mask on him or something like that.
Right.
Maybe play off of Retribution and have him come out like looking like this Slapjack guy that we saw, or something to that effect. That makes me think of, you know, when people would attack people in sting masks back in the day.
Right.
Hell, put a sting mask on him. Whatever. Have him pop in and attack Brian and, you know, real go after the neck type of thing. And maybe not even speak to the crowd the first week. Reveal his face.
So like a Jericho thing when he came back.
Yeah. And then have him come back and kind of just run down the WWE universe and, you know, tell him exactly how he... Make it feel like a shoot, almost. Mm-hmm. Make it feel like he's not necessarily coming back to... because there's not a title involved. Or let's say there's not a title involved. So make it feel like he's not back to win the WWE title. He's not back. He's right. Back to, you know... hurt people and get payback for all the years that he missed, all the money he missed, all the and maybe even bring Paul Heyman with him.
Right.
Just to drive home the point of, you know, this is my manager, he's gonna get me the best contract possible. Maybe almost play on the, you know, how they did with Roman Reigns where he didn't sign the contract to the right. Last second. Just as in a fact of like a holdout for more money. Like WWE is, you know, everybody in this crowd wants to see this. They want right. to see me in the ring, whether you like me or not. And Vince McMahon is going to pay me. Triple H is going to pay me, you know, type of thing. And
that's actually a good point, because his biggest beef was with Triple H.
Mm-hmm.
So
he has to be a part of that story. Yeah.
So do you bring back Triple H to wrestle him after Daniel Bryan?
Maybe. I don't hate that. I like that. And
but it has to be one match. It can't be like five.
Absolutely. Has to be one off, like a WrestleMania match, you know? Like, and maybe that would be the perfect setup, because, and granted, I don't necessarily, I hate when they, you know, take a big pay-per-view match and turn it into a story, essentially, where it's not. But with that, I don't hate the fact that maybe Triple H gets involved in the Bryan right. Punk match. Maybe you have a match at the Rumble to set up for the WrestleMania match for Triple H, and, you know, have CM Punk winning the match and, you know, really messing Daniel Bryan up. Some back and forth there. I definitely see them as very equal wrestlers
right.
From a fan standpoint. And then I wouldn't want Triple H to get involved himself necessarily. Maybe he like hires a crooked official or something along those lines, of maybe even like a Montreal Screwjob ish where he you know, rings the bell prematurely on a yes lock or something like that to set up what would have to be, I would think, like a street fight or something at WrestleMania right. between Triple H and CM Punk.
Right. Yeah, I agree. It'd have to be WrestleMania. I think the interesting part about that would be, you know, maybe threaten to injure Daniel Bryan. Maybe threaten to end Daniel Bryan's career.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like Batista did with Ric Flair. That beta Triple H into the match. I mean, obviously you can't really... I don't know. I guess you could. But... once you get past Triple H with CM Punk, where do you go from there? Do you give him Roman Reigns? Because I don't see Roman Reigns losing the title anytime soon.
I think either one of two things, essentially. And yeah, I agree with you. And if, like, you know, in a fantasy booking world, if we're looking at WrestleMania to be the Triple H CM Punk match you're looking at, now Roman has had a lengthy title run. Mm-hmm. I mean, he won the belt in August or September. September. Right. He won the belt in September. So then we're looking at a very lengthy title run of 6-7 months or so. So I think it would be okay for Punk to take the belt off of him. Or maybe he goes for the WWE title. And, you know, who knows what's going on with that at that point.
Right.
But I think that either it's gotta be either that and, like, that's it with Punk, essentially. He, you know, you have the Bryan match, you have the Triple H match, and, you know, done with it all, essentially. Or maybe give him some time to recuperate, because I would think that, you know, Triple H CM Punk to me would almost have to be a Cactus Jack Triple H type of street fight. Like, it's gotta be a rough match. Both of them are going to be, you know, bruised and battered from this match. They hate each other. I mean, and especially in the kayfabe world, like, you know, they hate each other. And they don't like each other in real life. So essentially, if then that poses the question, if we're involving Paul Heyman with Punk, how does Paul Heyman fit in with Roman Reigns too? And then at that point, Paul Heyman needs to convince CM Punk why he wants to win the WWE title. Because Punk is back for vengeance. Punk is not back to win belts or be the greatest of all time anymore. He's just back for vengeance on WWE for what they've done to him. Which also sets up, could be an interesting story, like, line to that, is of Paul Heyman like a promoter, essentially.
Right.
I have these two wonderful wrestlers. One of them has a belt, you know, let's put them together and essentially, like, bring them together and say, you know, I can make both of you more money than you would ever, you know, and put it on of, like, it's a prize fight. It's a, you know, a huge event in which you would probably have to hold out for, like, a SummerSlam. That would be the next big pay-per-view. And I think that story could take up quite a bit of time. And I don't think that... one thing that bothers me so much with WWE is long-term storytelling, because as a fan, okay, maybe it sucks to not have a title match on every pay-per-view or not have this or that, or, you know, like, a title change, or, you know, we want to see this guy be champion, but we also want to see this guy be champion, you know. Not everybody gets to be champion, you know. Right. Like, it's not a pass-around type of deal, and I think that with long term, to get the validation and the just the feeling you get from a long term story paying off, even just like with Sasha and Bayley,
right?
You know, like, that was a huge payoff, you know, and I think that that's really missed a lot of times, and so much short sight that WWE misses so much long term payoff, because that is so much better than, you know, a little short-term payoff.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be kind of hard to let that breathe in booking in general. Because, I mean, you do have to figure out, you know, how do you put CM Punk over Strong for essentially after, you know, WrestleMania 5 months. Because, I mean, you let him win at WrestleMania, and he's got 5 months to stay strong enough to wrestle Roman Reigns for the title.
And I think the best way to do that, especially if, you know, this scenario, the best way to do that is maybe you don't see him a lot. Right. Like a Brock Lesnar type deal. And, right. you know, when you do see him, it's like, you know, him and Paul Heyman. Or, you know, I think in this scenario, a huge scope on money and contract and, like, everything's got to be right every time. That way, we don't need to see CM Punk every Monday night. We don't need, especially not in the ring, you know. I don't think that he even needs to have another match necessarily. And especially if you're booking it to a way of, like, it being this ultimate prize fight. Because I think that it's funny, just, and I know we talked about this on the show, about the, you know, the relationship between mixed martial arts and wrestling. I think both of them can take so much from each other.
Right.
When it comes to promoting and in MMA and booking when it comes to WWE. Because, I mean, like, look at what happened this last weekend with Khabib. You know, we haven't seen Khabib fight in over a year.
Right.
Everyone's ready to see Khabib fight, you know? Right. Everyone was excited for that fight, you know? And, or a Conor McGregor. And at with CM Punk, he is in a different stratosphere, I think, when it comes to at least the WWE universe of, like, the way that we view him. You know, he is this huge anti-hero. And I don't think that he needs to be necessarily a week to week, especially, like, because I think the biggest complaint with Brock is that he holds the title off TV.
Right.
And at that point, you don't have a title involved. Roman can keep doing his thing and essentially let this, put it on the back burner and let it, you know, wait till it boils, you know, kind of have an underlying storyline towards it, toward the buildup. And then once we get the payoff, you know, and even if it's, you know, 5 months, you know, from WrestleMania to SummerSlam.
Right.
That's still huge, you know. And I think you could even go, I mean, look at Rock and Cena. We went a whole year of build for that.
Right.
I think you could even build that from WrestleMania to WrestleMania. And I mean, how long of a title run is that now for Roman Reigns? I mean, that's over a year and a half. And I'm not against that. I think that we need more title runs like that.
Right.
We need long-term title runs. Right. And that just makes you feel like the belt means that much more. And I don't know. I mean, just like, again, looking across at MMA, it doesn't hurt anything when a guy holds a belt for 3 years. Or, you know, it strengthens everything. I mean, then again, you know, now in the kayfabe world, you're looking at guys that aren't getting their chance and aren't getting their run, but you've been telling me for 10 years Roman Reigns is the guy.
Yeah.
Let him be the guy.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you're basically right. You have to let somebody who you've genetically enhanced as a star, let him be a star.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think they're starting to do that now. Because the last, you know, 2 months, basically, have been spectacular by him. And like I said at the very beginning of the show, Paul Heyman's facials in the whole match, and I think I heard him telling Roman Reigns, don't do this, at one point. He never said that to Brock Lesnar. And it just adds a whole nother layer to the Roman Reigns character.
Yeah, this is a whole new Roman Reigns.
It's a whole new Roman Reigns, and it's beautiful. His even his promos have been fantastic. You know, very foreboding, very, you know, very, I don't even know how to describe it in a word, really. Just very, this is what I'm going to do. So you have the option of not doing this, or this is what's going to happen to you. And I mean, obviously we're going back to a circle here, but just that whole match and the whole building of Roman Reigns is only getting better each week. I'd like to see him take on somebody new. I don't know who that'd be. I'm trying to think who would be on SmackDown that would be good enough to take him on at this point in time. So I don't think we'll see an Uso 3. I think they'll form their group now.
Yeah, I think so. I think that was part of the stipulation of the match.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I kind of feel you, because I don't know who exactly you put in there with him. Braun Strowman is the first guy that comes to my head.
That's old and tired. Absolutely. And I don't think you can book Braun Strowman's microphone skills against Roman Reigns. It's just not... It just wouldn't sell.
And it sucks, because I think that Braun is really kind of... I think he peaked and has fallen at this point. He's kind of a falling star. And
I think they tried with the title, and but it was obviously going to be a Bray Wyatt Braun Strowman feud. Mm-hmm. And that's where it was going. And you couldn't let Bray Wyatt lose more than once or twice, or even though he technically lost once, and the second time was, you know, bringing out the Fiend.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean that. It just kind of... Braun Strowman finds himself in situations where he can't be the guy just for the fact that he's wrestling somebody they're trying to get to be the guy. But at the time, you know, he's supposed to be that guy. So he's had a hard career of what after leaving the Wyatt family of trying to be, you know, that big cartoonish, you know, villain. I mean, obviously, his first run with Roman Reigns was good.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But they're two different characters now.
Yeah. And so, he's definitely an interesting character at this point.
Right. So, I mean, AJ's on Raw now, so you can't do Roman AJ, which would be really good.
Yeah, that would have been excellent.
I guess you could do Roman Daniel. But I don't know. I think a lot of people are unsure of Daniel Bryan's future right now. I think they feel like he might be retiring at this point.
Really?
Or at least taking a step back from full-time. I don't even know who would be on that roster.
Seth Rollins, maybe?
Rollins, Kevin Owens. Oh, you know what? I bet it might be Seth Rollins.
I can see that. But then at that point, you've got heel.
Rollins would turn face. Because he doesn't have that Messiah following anymore.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you know what? I can totally see that.
I feel like Rollins would try to join with Reigns, and then Reigns would reject him. Then Rollins would become face again, just for the fact of... Now he tries to tear down Roman Reigns.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about Seth Rollins?
He needed to be heel.
Yeah.
And I think he's a great heel. I liked the Messiah thing. I thought it was worked well. It's a little bit of a ripoff of CM Punk. A little bit.
Yeah.
Not as well delivered as CM Punk's. But Seth Rollins was a bigger star at the time than CM Punk was.
Yeah, and I liked the whole Monday Night Messiah gig. Right. Like, I thought that was cool. That was smart.
Right.
You know?
Because, I mean, he needed something that made him delusional. And I like that. And it contests with the whole theme of when you wrestle the Fiend, you become a different person. And that was, you know, it's another nod to their storytelling abilities when they want them to be.
Yeah, because when WWE wants to tell a story, they can tell a hell of a mm-hmm. story. And just Hell in a Cell shows you that from the different matches.
Right.
The Retribution versus Bobby Lashley. Awful. But then you look at Jey Uso and, you know, Roman Reigns, and it's like, it was one of the greatest storytelling performances ever.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's so flip of a coin with them, but I think you do Rollins Reigns. just kind of go with the storyline of maybe Rollins feels like he can join Reigns and be stronger. You know, Reigns pretends to let him in, and then does, you know, the things that he's been doing. But you kind of have to let Reigns destroy Rollins. I don't think you let that be a fair match.
I agree at this point in time, but I think that's also why put that on the back burner maybe for a minute. Right. You know, and give some, you know, bring somebody else up for him to absolutely destroy. Because I think you're right. I think he needs another feud where he dominates, you know, and right. just get that real feeling behind him that, you know, he's steamrolling and nobody can stop him.
I don't think you throw Kevin Owens in that then.
I agree.
Because you, I mean, I feel like that. I feel like that actually could be next then. Because you don't want, I think you're right, you don't want Seth Rollins get in there right away. So it might be Kevin Owens. Which, if it is, that's just so tricky. Because you can't let Kevin Owens be beat like that. But you kind of have to.
Right. And especially where he's at right now, where he's kind of fluctuating at this kind of mid-card to upper-card level. I mean, either way, I think Reigns is having a wonderful run as a heel right now. Right. A great title run, and I think exactly what he needed for his career. So one more thing that I wanted to talk about before we get to the end of the show is WWE posted it on their Instagram, and we shared it to our Instagram, and I put up a poll of Red Cell or Classic Cell. How do you feel about the Red Cell? I think we all know everybody's answer to it, because it was a unanimous vote on our Instagram of Classic Cell over the Red Cell.
Yeah. I don't mind the Red Cell. I do like Classic Cell more. But I don't mind the Red Cell. I think it was hard for them to sell the fact that they were, you know, injuring themselves on the steel. So they made it more of a darker color to give away that fact. I don't know. I think I like the Classic setup more. It's kind of hard to dislike, you know, the gray cell. But they used to have, you know, that blue steel cage.
That's true.
Which I did not like at all.
Really? I kind of like that.
I didn't really like that. It made it look, you know, cheap. The red Hell in a Cell doesn't look cheap.
I'll give you that for sure. For sure. Especially looking at it right now. I mean, it doesn't look bad. And to me, I feel like the first time that they did that seemed like it was harder to see, and I didn't feel like that this.
I didn't feel like that either. Yeah.
Was last year the first year they did that, or was that a couple of years ago?
I think they did it a couple of years ago.
Yeah, because I think Sasha and Charlotte was in a red cell.
Yeah.
That's been a few years since that. I don't mind. I feel you. I don't necessarily mind the red cell. I guess I don't care. I mean, it's, I don't know. It is what it is, I feel.
It just adds a different layer to the match, I think.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. But everything, I think, watching it for so long, I think, you know, a lot of the classics are more appealing to the early, mid-2000s fans than the late 2000s people, for sure. One thing I wanted to add before we end it, Alexa Bliss adds more stuff to her fiendish thing, now has the contacts, is now fully in with the Fiend, I suppose. So where do you take her, you know, where do you go from here? Do you add another person? Do you give her a mask? You know, I think
her I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah. I think her with the mask would be pretty cool.
I think that would be too. That'd be interesting. But I like her as more a valet type thing. Right. Like, I don't think she needs to wrestle in this role. And I think it's a perfect role for her because I know she's had her injuries and, you know, she's had time away from the ring in the past, and I think a perfect way, you know, save your body and, you know, keep doing this role because it works in this light. And I think as of right now, the answer to your question for me of, you know, if you add anybody else, I don't think so. Not right now. I don't feel
right,
like...
Not right now.
Right. Yeah. And it, but I just mean, I guess, for future reference, I don't think in the future you add anybody to this. Right now, that's how I feel. Maybe in a month or two, I'll feel different. But I think that this is a perfect dynamic. I think that it's perfect. And the only thing with this, though, that it feels like... I guess we've moved on from the Braun storyline. But... I don't know. I just think that's an interesting... I think there's still a little bit of untold story to that whole Braun, Bray, Alexa mix, if that makes sense. And I like the fact they didn't beat it into the ground and that it ended up ending where it did, but I also feel like there is still some unexplored to that story because Roman just ended the story, essentially.
Right. Well,
just because that was somewhat of a, and I'm using air quotes, love interest for, you know, like Braun and Alexa at one point, you know, during that whole mixed tag team challenge and stuff, how they were kind of playing up that they were, you know, going to be together kayfabe-wise, and... Right. Then that's kind of how she got added to, you know, be an extra layer to that story. And I guess that's why I feel more so like there's a little bit unexplored just between the three. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'd hate it if they continue to do any of it.
Yeah, I don't see much left for them other than Braun joining them.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I want to see a Wyatt reunion either, though.
But what if it's in the same light and you give Braun a mask? A fiendish mask, you know, and he's somewhat of like... just thinking of that makes me think of Bane from the Batman.
Yeah.
Was that Batman and Robin, I think?
Yeah.
Anyways, terrible movie, but just like that makes me think of that. But to have just like this... You know, imagine the Fiend already being the Fiend and then also having this huge, insane, you know, monster Braun Strowman that goes and does all of the beatings for him.
Yeah, I guess it'd basically be the same thing as the Wyatt family, pretty much. I wouldn't mind it. I wouldn't mind him joining them at some point, but I agree. I think it's too early. I think what you have with Alexa Bliss is good. I'd like to see if they actually give her a mask.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting.
Because they already gave her the whatever, you know.
The so, eyes, yeah. When her eyes turned red last night.
So, I don't know. I think you give her a mask, and I think you have to give her the title then.
Absolutely. Yeah, you have to give her the title. Asuka holds the Raw women's belt right now, right? Yeah.
And there ain't nobody on Raw.
No. And then, you know, they could both, you know, run roughshod through Raw. I think that the only thing about The Fiend being in the title picture that worries me is them kind of... I like the how they pointed back to their feud around when The Fiend held the belt, right, and Orton took it from him at WrestleMania 33. I like that they pointed back to that and he burned down the shack or
whatever. Right, the house, yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting, but I think it's the same thing like with the Sasha Banks in the title right now. You have to commit. If you're going to do this, you have to commit.
Right.
There is no going back. And, you know, if The Fiend doesn't... If he takes the belt and doesn't hold it for more... At least 6 months. I think that that's doing more bad for the character than good.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're led to believe that he's this insane force.
Mm-hmm.
And if he is not going to appear that way on television, I feel like, you know, what's the point? What's the point of even involving him in this? Might as well just let, you know, McIntyre and Orton continue their feud.
Yeah, I think...
We're throwing AJ Styles in there. Yeah, so, you know,
I
mean...
I think pretty much we're looking at... I think you're looking at an Orton McIntyre one more time, since Orton has the title. At, but whatever you can't do it at Survivor
Series. Yeah, whatever the December pay-per-view will be. And I'm almost okay with that, and Orton has to win it, obviously. But I'm okay with that just because that gives us, you know, it's the same thing like we talked about with the Keith Lee thing. It gives us some time to breathe.
Right.
We'll at least have a month between seeing another match between them, but...
Right. Or was the Fiend a swerve-ish foreboding thing because Edge has to come back and Orton can't lose the title before then?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the Fiend was a swerve from WWE.
That's possible.
I think the point is that the Fiend always remembers, you know, rivalries, and it's just really good backtelling.
Right.
WWE.
Absolutely.
So,
and the Bray Wyatt character, right. You know, like, which is somewhat apart from the Fiend, which I love the fact that he's done that with his character.
Mm-hmm.
There's kind of a distinguished Bray Wyatt. There's a distinguished Fiend. So, and I think Bray Wyatt being this just insane, obsessive kind of, you know, crazy person,
right.
I think is awesome. Like you said, that he remembers the feuds and things like that. Maybe it's a whole swerve and we're going to get Fiend-McIntyre rivalry with, you know, you know, they have a match and they swerve it with Edge coming back, the DQ, and because you said that McIntyre and Fiend kind of had a deal, and it's like, well, what happened to our deal? Like, well,
right.
Edge came back, whatever, okay, now we're fighting and they're fighting.
A lot of interesting shit.
Right.
A lot of interesting shit. But, I mean, we've had fun the last two episodes. Had a lot of good feedback the last two. I thought we've had a lot of good times.
Absolutely. I think the show's done a lot better than expected the, you know, beginning to be.
Right, yeah. I mean, I thought it's been great. And, you know, we love to hear from you guys. So let us know what you guys want to hear about next, because I know we're into a lot of different fantasy booking things and situations. So if you have any that you'd like to talk about, or, you know, fantasy book-wise, let us know, because I like the idea of a good fantasy booking.
Absolutely. We're available on YouTube, Anchor, Spotify, a few other podcast networks.
Wherever you find a podcast.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
But I mean, other than that, we got other stuff to review another day, so we'll save it for another day. We're out of here.